Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of American Criminal. In our latest season, the child of Italian immigrants sets out to achieve the American dream. And if he has to spill some blood along the way, so be it. Listen to American Criminal, Al Capone, wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get ad-free access to the entire season first, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
There is nothing better than curling up on the couch at the end of a busy day and watching a great mystery thriller. The hubby and I are always looking for a new exciting series, and I have got the perfect one for you to watch next. Spectrum Originals' Angela Black.
This show is perfect for fans who like a gripping mystery thriller like Gone Girl, Girl on the Train, The Undoing, Sharp Objects. I mean, I watched the trailer and I am so in. It stars that actor. He was in The Flight Attendant. His name's Michael Huseman. Sorry, Michael. I love you. He plays this seemingly loving husband, but he's clearly the villain.
I'm telling you, you have to start watching Angela Black today. Binge all of the episodes for free on demand on Spectrum Now.
That's Spectrum Originals, Angela Black.
I start my day with AG1 by Athletic Greens. I'm totally hooked. Also, you know, I use a nutrient tracker and it's really satisfying to see just how much AG1 helps me reach my nutrition goals every day.
One tasty scoop of AG1 contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients, including a multivitamin, multi-mineral, probiotic, greens, superfood blend, and more in one convenient daily serving. I mean, I have so gotten into the routine of this. I don't have to think. I just scoop and I am good for the day.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you an immune-supporting free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit athleticgreens.com/TheoC today.
Again, simply visit athleticgreens.com/TheoC to take control of your health and give AG1 a try.
Dun, 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 dun. Welcome to the OC, bitches.
Welcome to the OC, bitches.
We are on season 2, episode 11, The Second Chance. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited today.
I am very, very excited today.
We have a very special guest, and our guest today is a friend we have some very affectionate memories with. Jennifer Anderson is a production manager and a first assistant director on shows like The OC. She went on to Chuck and Pretty Little Liars, Famous in Love, The Good Place, and most recently, The Sex Lives of College Girls. She was our first, and we are so happy to have her and her memories. Welcome, Jennifer.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
It's so good to see you.
I know. It really has been a while.
I know. So, you know, when we think about, first of all, I will repeat myself. The best thing about doing this podcast is reconnecting with people.
Yes.
And having these conversations. And, you know, our memories are limited. And I'm so excited to get your memories. Because if there's any, I don't know, I've always been so in respect, and I admire first ADs, mm-hmm. first assistant directors, and we should start with the definition of what that is. But you create relationships with all of us, and you know everything that's going on a set.
Definitely.
And so,
hopefully you do. Hopefully you do.
Right.
Gosh, a first AD primarily is in charge of the schedule, but it starts in prep. Usually on a show, there are two first ADs and we rotate. So one is prepping while the other AD is shooting. And then the episode I'm prepping will then start shooting and you rotate. Sort of prep for a first starts with the script. You break it down and then you schedule it. You schedule it in the most logical way. Usually it starts with you group all the locations together and okay, we're going to shoot all the locations at this house together. And then all of the other pieces of the puzzle. Well, we don't have this person available. Okay, so we can't shoot them on that day. So you start with sort of creating a schedule for shooting the episode. Then once you start shooting, basically a first AD is in charge of keeping everybody on track, you know, making sure that we are making the time to make our day. And it's also really about making sure all of the departments know what is needed for the scene and what scenes we're shooting on that day. So if this were the scene, we'd need to make sure that, you know, the cast knew what their call time is, hair and makeup knew who was going to be in, wardrobe knew that it was a casual setting and have you fit all the actors. You know, props knows that we're shooting this scene, so you need beverages and you need, you know, snacks, and it sort of goes on from there. So basically, first AD, when you're shooting, is making sure that everybody knows what we're shooting on the day, and then really watching the clock and sort of being the cheerleader or the taskmaster in terms of, okay, we got to move on, you know, because really you set, you have five scenes to shoot in a day. You know, you need to shoot an 11-hour day. You do the math and you have to keep everybody on track.
It's pretty, when I've seen the breakdown, when you say just breakdown, you break down everything and you say, this is exactly what's required for this scene. And this is what's required, like you say, props, costume, everything. And then you have a big production meeting and everybody gets the whole, gets the notes. And then it's up to those, each department to do their job. And on the day that we say action and everything happens, it's a magic. It's miraculous that it happens.
Yeah, but I feel like it's really you or first ADs that run the show. You know, like as an actor, I'd always be like, okay, Jen, am I going to wrap? You know, you have to wrap the actors and then they're done. And like, you always know what's going on and your directing background as well, right?
Yes.
And which are the extras or background, however you want to say it. But I would always look to you or any first AD to really know what's going on because you guys really hold everything together.
There's also some union rules that I think are interesting. The director of the episode needs something, you know, he needs light, whatever needs to be done, he communicates it to the first AD. He's not technically allowed to talk to the departments. Is that rule? Or and then you let the department heads know?
It's usually, it's not that it's not allowed. It really just streamlines things.
I see. And
also, I think because if a director asks for something, maybe without telling me, I can't help them. I can't help follow up on, hey, you know, we talked about this. It wasn't scripted, but I know that the director wanted this. If it doesn't sort of get filtered through me, mm-hmm. it could fall through the cracks. There's sort of a debate as to how much a director can direct background. There comes a point in that if a director directs background action, is that background actor now actually a principal actor?
Ah.
So I think a lot of that sort of stuff on set and, you know, goes through an AD, a first or a second. But usually, again, a first is sort of the funnel mm-hmm. for all of that. And that way also, it's sort of accountable. We are then accountable with mm-hmm. that information.
Right, right. Well, and that, that was just an introduction to what you do because it's so complicated. You rotated with Matt...
Hinckley. Yes.
That was our other first.
Yes.
So let's... How did you become, because I know a little bit about this, but right. how did you end up coming on the OC?
I was working down in San Diego on with Stu Siegel Productions mm-hmm. and first went down there on Renegade with Lorenzo Lamas and then did a show. And on that show, I met Lisa Cochran.
Who was our UPM.
Who was the UPM.
Unit production manager.
Yes.
And met her, did Renegade, and then did Pensacola Wings of Gold, and did Invisible Man. And I had moved up to first AD on Invisible Man. Lisa got the job on the OC, and production in San Diego had really sort of been, it wasn't as strong as it had been. And Lisa said, do you want to come up and do this with me? And I said, sure. And, I relayed this story to you, but, when I first moved, when I first got on the OC, I was still living in San Diego. So I'd come up and I'd live in the dressing rooms.
What? No.
I was like, we were talking the other day and I went, what? Okay, wait.
Which dressing room
did you pick? I said, because Kelly had the best couch.
Right.
So
Kelly had the best couch?
Yeah, I tried to get it. Yeah. No, but no,
it was whoever wasn't coming in the following day. So I didn't have to like worry about like Peter Gallagher walking in his bathroom being like, why is my shower wet? So it was sort of whoever, I mean, and it wasn't for long. It really was probably about 2 weeks. Mm. And then I was driving home to San Diego on the weekends. So it was about 2 weeks that I would just sort of couch surf on like, you know, oh, okay, Peter's not in tomorrow. Kelly's not in tomorrow. Rachel's not in tomorrow. Who still has like good bath products in their shower too? And then it was a couple of weeks. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm a grown woman. What am I doing? Like couch surfing in dressing rooms. Also, I wasn't leaving too.
Right.
Which got to be like weird. And I needed a little separation. But that was when I first got onto the OC and I was working as the second AD first season.
I remember that.
Which is sort of more, a lot more paperwork and behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And also dealing with scheduling, but sort of going with the first's information as your guideline. But so first season, I was the second. And then we had a few first ADs on that first year. And Jonathan moved on to another project and I moved up. Mm-hmm. But it was an interesting beginning to my OC history.
And you stayed with us till the end, didn't
yes.
you?
Yeah.
Yep.
Your face was very, very consistent.
Oh, yeah. No, but like we said, because first ADs are so integrated in yes. every move you make when you're working and shooting and everything. It's like you never leave. And obviously you alternate. There's two first ADs, but like you're always right there with us.
Yes.
And
yes.
even directors, you can't be like, hey, am I done? Like you can't even, directors can't excuse the actors.
No.
They'll make a mistake or whatever. But it's just, such an important job and like really keeps everything together.
Well, and also I think what's interesting is that the first, we kind of discussed this, that there are different, you know, first ADs have a huge, huge amount of pressure and it's so important. And they're, you know, it's important to, you know, you guys are essentially the captain of the ship. So much in television, you know, directors really have a lot more power in film and commercials even. But in television, sometimes, unless they're a resident director, sometimes they're kind of a guest at the party.
Definitely.
And we tend to rely on our first ADs as the consistent
right.
voice.
Well, you're part of the family.
Right.
I think so. I think so, especially in episodic television. It's sort of the first AD and the DP mm-hmm. who are sort of mom and dad in a weird way of the set.
Right.
You know, and directors will come in and are guests. And it is sort of for the DP on a show to maintain the integrity of a look that the showrunners and the producers want to see. Certainly, directors will have their ideas and we integrate them, but they sort of monitor and make sure that this is the look of the show that everybody wants. And I think the first ADs also then, I think the crew looks to them, I think for guidance. And I also think that the first AD will very much set a tone. Mm-hmm. You know, if a first AD
is a screamer,
then it sets a certain tone. Mm-hmm. You know, I think if a first AD is sort of the sky is falling, the crew sort of feeds off of that energy. Mm-hmm. You know, so I really, you know, for me and my style has always been sort of, I want to lead the charge. I want to, you know, I will do whatever you need me to. I'll be the first one to run and like move a cone if it's in the shot. And, you know, and I just like to hopefully create a efficient but fun atmosphere.
If you ever have a conversation with the first AD or anyone on the AD team, it usually goes like this. So you're talking to Jen, la 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 la, and all of a sudden it's,
right. They tell you to hold
somebody's
on
talking
and someone's
in their
talking
ear,
in their ear.
And I'm like, I'm mid-sentence and we're having a conversation and they're just like off doing something else. And it's like, what?
Yeah, it's usually like you can tell that their eyes will move off to the side
exactly.
just a little bit.
Right.
And you know that somebody's talking to them on a walkie.
Right.
Absolutely.
So obviously there's a director of the episode and then you have the assistant director team. And there's the first AD who does everything you're talking about. And then you have a second and then a second.
It's
and
very
then
confusing.
A third and a third and then a DGA trainee.
Yes.
And it's actually one of the
Directors
it's actually,
Guild.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just explaining letters.
It's a director's guild. Today. So, but it is one of the ways to get into, for people who don't know, some people go to film school and they come out and they become directors or some such, but to go through the AD trainee program is a way to get your days and move up and in the system.
Get in the union.
Get in the union.
Yes.
And it's actually very difficult, rigorous, many hours kind of program.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I did not go through the trainee program. Mm-hmm. I went, I started in production in New York as a PA.
Yeah.
And
production assistant.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, explainer of letters. Yeah. I got into the Directors Guild, DGA, by just the amount of days as a PA, and you have to like have all your documents. And I remember having this tiny little apartment in Santa Monica, and literally every spot on the floor had paperwork. And it's like all of your call sheets, production reports, all of the sort of, you know, daily paperwork that we do to create and say who's working all over the floor. And that's actually, I submitted my days to get into the union. Mm-hmm. And that's the other way to go, but it's longer. It's certainly longer than the trainee program, but the trainee program is a wonderful opportunity also to make connections you wouldn't necessarily, because as a trainee, you are assigned productions, whereas, you know, as a PA, you have to get somebody to hire you.
You have to hustle.
Yes.
But this is an industry of...
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.
There's not much nepotism, really, and it's not respected. It's most people need to work from the ground up. You need to start as a PA. You need to start as a trainee. You need to start to know the business and do all of the jobs. And you don't just go to film school and say, I'm going to direct my big, you know. It happens to some people.
And you can.
It happened to Josh.
Yes, it did.
It did happen to Josh. You all know about my love of Athletic Greens and AG1. I start every day with my electrolytes and go right into my workout. Good hydration and AG1 wakes me up and it gets my day started right.
Today's program is brought to you by Athletic Greens, the health and wellness company that makes comprehensive daily nutrition really, really simple.
AG1 by Athletic Greens brings comprehensive and convenient daily nutrition to everybody. Keeping up with the research, knowing what to do, and taking a bunch of pills and capsules is hard on the stomach, and it's hard to keep up. To keep each of us at our best, they simplify the path to better nutrition by giving you the one thing with all the best things.
Let me tell you, this is so convenient, and convenience is key for me. I can just do a scoop, I get all the nutrients and minerals I need, and I don't have to think about it.
And as I've gotten a little older, I'm constantly trying new exercises, new recipes, tweaking this or that, but I have stayed consistent with AG1.
What I find really cool about Athletic Greens is their continued improvements that they make to AG1 based on the latest research. They've improved the formulation 53 times in the last decade.
I also love that no matter your lifestyle, AG1 can fit right in. It's for folks who eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, low sugar, and there are no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything.
To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you an immune-supporting free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit athleticgreens.com/TheoC. Today.
Again, simply visit athleticgreens.com/TheoC to take control of your health and give AG1 a try.
Did you know cats are carnivores that need lots of meat, Mindy?
I did know that, but what I did not know is that the leading cat food brands are often filled with fillers, grains, and very little protein. That's why I switched to cat person. It's everything my cat needs to stay happy and healthy, high quality, high protein meals delivered right to my door.
And fellow cat owners, they'll do the same for you. If you order your starter box today, we've arranged for Cat Person to provide an exclusive offer of nearly 50% off just for our listeners.
Cat Person is protein packed, 50% more than industry standards, and only uses wholesome ingredients. The food is grain-free and low carb, so there's no room for unnecessary fillers you find in many other brands that can cause digestive problems.
Meal plans are fully customized for your cat and perfect for cats of all ages. There are 16 easy-to-serve wet foods and 3 different dry foods, so you'll be sure to find the combinations your cat will love.
My Ziggy loves Cat Person, and he loves his seafood. His favorites are salmon, tuna, mackerel, and he loves both the wet and the dry. I mean, he's the loudest eating cat I've ever seen. Anyway.
Okay, so I have recommended this stuff to my sister-in-law, my stepmom, all the people that I love that have cats, because I don't have cats of my own, and they cannot stop raving about it. Their cats are obsessed.
You won't believe all that's included in your starter box. Listen to this. 10 cups of wet food, 1 2-pound bag of dry food, plus an entire set of serving spoons, silicone lids, and a scooper. And Cat Person offers a 30-day money-back guarantee on your custom plan if your cat doesn't love Cat Person. No questions asked.
You and your cat are going to love Cat Person as much as we do. Go to catperson.com/OC and use code OC to save nearly 50% on your starter box with free shipping.
That's catperson.com/OC. Code OC to get nearly 50% off your starter box with free shipping. Catperson.com/OC. Code OC.
You watched this episode?
I did. I did.
Okay. Were you the first on this episode?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And I had, asked Diana, I was like, is it one of mine?
I know. Yeah. I might not know it otherwise.
Yeah.
The synopsis, Summer takes an active role in the making of the comic book, which worries Seth. And for good reason, as old feelings emerge. Sandy takes on Rebecca's case, but continues to keep it a secret from Kirsten that she's alive. Lindsay gives it another try at forming a relationship with Caleb. And after a near-death experience, she believes he's ready to be her father. Lindsay, I am your father.
You're right.
Okay.
Directed by Tony Huombe.
Oh, I love him.
Adore. He sends Tony his regards. He lives in Hawaii now.
I mean, that's the way to go. I mean, right? That's what I want to do.
I remember, actually, the first Tech Scout with Tony. And I'm not sure if this was his first episode on the OC or not, but a Tech Scout is during prep, once you've chosen all of your locations, and usually a director and a production designer and the first AD and a producer will go and scout and choose your location. So, you know, we need the Sandy's new office. We scout and we look at 17 new offices. We decide. And then the Tech Scout usually happens a couple of days before you start shooting. You take the crew out and show them so that they know, the riggers know what they have to do, locations understands what we're going to see. It's a whole process. But the very first Tech Scout we took Tony on, and I don't think it was this episode because it was some sort of grass field we were walking around in, and Tony had on like red velvet, like driving moccasins, like something so inappropriate for the terrain that we were, because he's such a gentleman. He was such a like gent. And these, I just remember these like really pristine red driving mocks that he was wearing.
And they came out soaked.
Yeah, I'm sure he didn't do that again.
No, yeah. But that is him. That's a pretty good way to describe him, just those moccasins alone.
Yes.
But we loved Tony. Yes. It was written by Drew Z. Greenberg and Josh Schwartz. Original air date, February 3rd,
which is today.
Oh my God.
Isn't that amazing?
Wow. How many years later?
18 years?
Is that? No.
Wait.
What? I can't do them. What? 2005?
Yes.
You know what?
17.
Definitely okay. My thing, guys. Definitely my thing. All right, so this episode opens in what?
Oh, shocker.
The Cohen kitchen.
We love these Cohen kitchen scenes.
How did you feel about shooting in the kitchen?
The kitchen was better than the pool house. Pool
really?
House was a pain in the... I mean, just spatially, it was tight.
Right.
But...
You couldn't get a crew in the pool house.
No. I mean, the sets were amazing.
Yeah. And not to like go off on a tangent too much, but the sets on The OC were pretty incredible. From the whole Cohen house and the infinity, the actual infinity pool in the backyard and the bait shop. When the bait shop came into play, that two-story set, it was, and then I don't even remember what season, but we did that whole like boardwalk with the shop. Somebody worked at it.
Oh,
it was like
that
after
was season four.
Yes. Like after everyone had graduated.
We built that on the stage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
A boardwalk?
Yeah. Where the comic book store was.
Yes.
I remember the comic book store. I can have that visual.
It's upstairs.
Yeah.
So when
is that really when the diner impressive. Was on set on well, soundstage? We built the diner.
Yes, we built the diner.
But that was earlier. Sorry, we're back in the kitchen.
Sorry. We're back in the kitchen.
Kitchen was fine.
Yeah.
Ryan is studying.
He is studying.
He's studying.
I love Ryan in this scene because I love when Ben is relaxed and funny and gets to like do the humor thing.
Right. Right.
Ben does it really well and he doesn't get many opportunities.
He really is
No, he had to
great,
play the heavy a lot.
Yes, a lot.
But he's the great straight man to Seth's, you know, neurosis and comedic delivery.
Yeah.
And Seth is one of those guys like, why even bother talking unless it's funny? It has to have a humorous connotation behind it.
Right.
But this one's very, I always try to picture myself in the writer's rooms, like, how do we put a new spin on this? And he's like, I was coming to the pool house. Well, no, I'm studying. Okay. Well, I guess this subject isn't pool house worthy. Well, you know, it's okay for, you know, it's not pool house fodder. Now it's dining room talk. And Brian says, okay, I'll allow it as if he's the judge.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. Now what's the problem? Well, the problem is that he really is complaining that he has nothing to complain about because Ryan points out that he really doesn't have any girl issues right now.
Right. He does complain about working closely with Summer, right?
And then he says, that's not really a problem. Because he says, we want to work professionally and it's sexy. And Ryan says, no, it's a comic book. There's nothing less sexy. Right?
Yeah.
And so he goes, so you're telling me I'm complaining because I have nothing to complain about? And he's like, pretty much, dude.
Right.
Okay, so he accepts that.
Yeah.
There you go.
This next scene, I have to tell you.
So funny.
Sandy's sneaking back into the house and Seth is just at the stairs and he doesn't see him. I'm laughing the whole time, like how this is played. Who made you laugh the most?
Okay, good one.
Oh, gosh.
Who broke up the most?
Who broke up the most?
Broke up laughing.
Right.
Oh.
You know, you might be a contender.
For
and
laughing,
actually,
for sure.
And actually,
for
the laughing. Nose, like the nose graze scene, I remember a lot of laughing.
Oh my God, really?
But it's funny.
Oh, or I thought you were saying the breaking up.
Yeah, that's what she means.
Yeah, no, that's
I
what
I would
mean.
Break character the most. That was probably
just a lot of laughing.
Yeah.
You know what? I think it's funny because it's different. I think you were easy to sort of, but once you got Kelly going, she couldn't stop. Like you'd sort of pull yourself back together.
Right.
But like once you got her going, she would just get tickled and that would be it. Mm-hmm. Who made me laugh the most? Gosh, it's hard. Maybe Peter.
Right.
Maybe Peter he was sort of, and usually it was more outtakes or in between.
Right.
He's just a funny guy.
He's very goofy.
Yes.
He is
goofy. And you didn't see Sandy as goofy much, but Peter Gallagher is goofy.
It's very fun.
Yes. Yes.
But in this scene, there are those moments as a child, you know, you look up to your parents and they're just everything, but there are moments where you realize that your parents are just human beings. And this is one of those moments where Seth just is like, this, I have never seen this. Have you ever seen your parents walking in or
like sneaking in?
Or something?
Oh, Adam really made me laugh though.
His timing was so good.
Yes.
It built up this sort of anticipation, like when he's going to say something, it was great.
Right.
And then it was also sort of heartbreaking to have Sandy start to be this guy.
Yeah.
Well, because
he's obviously sneaking in because he spent the night reconnecting or, you know, getting familiar with, again, Rebecca, his last love before Tristan.
Right. So he's hanging out with Rebecca and instantly knows, like, I've got to sneak in. And I'm assuming let's say it's 6:30, you know, 6:37, because I guess that's still early enough because he's like, it's so early. But I love Seth's line. Perhaps if I let you off, you'll remember this act of kindness and afford me the same leniency if I miss my own curfew. Don't even go there. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's that respect.
Yeah.
But yeah, but he sneaks in.
It was a great exchange.
Sneaks into the bedroom. And I don't know what he thinks. And Kirsten's not there. So he's putting his shoes there. And then she's like, oh, honey, I was worried about you. And turns around and yeah, well, you know, it's like, what were you doing all night? But, you know, now that she doesn't have anything to worry about, but she made the assumption that he's been hanging out with Max all night. And
the professor. But this is Sandy's first lie, right? Doesn't he lie here?
He hasn't said... He hasn't said anything? He hasn't disclosed
lied
the
by
truth.
Omission.
Right,
by omission.
Right. Okay. Yes.
But then the phone rings, right? He just got there, right? Wasn't he... Don't you...
On Valentine's Day 1929, a group of gangsters was massacred in a cold Chicago garage. The crime shook the country. And even though investigators had only just started looking for answers, everyone was sure they already knew who was behind the crime. Al Capone. Hi, I'm Jeremy Schwartz, host of the new true crime history podcast, American Criminal. We take you inside the minds of some of our most notorious felons and outlaws, exploring the dark side to the American dream. In our latest season, a child of Italian immigrants sets out to make good on the promises of that dream. But Al Capone's path to success doesn't take him down the straight and narrow. Instead, he transforms himself from a smarter-than-your-average thug into the most infamous criminal America has ever known. Listen to American Criminal Al Capone wherever you get your podcasts. Or to get early ad-free access to the entire season first, plus hundreds of other ad-free history podcast episodes, subscribe at IntoHistory.com.
I think he was spending the time with Rebecca, and he just got home, and now she's saying, I'm at the pier, come meet me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't they just have... And then
they just left each other, and now she's like, you want to get coffee? This is trouble.
This is trouble.
As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Right. But it's... And I had to write... I wrote, oh God, it feels so yucky. But now, back in the kitchen, Kirsten is the one distracting Ryan from his studying. And because he's still studying, it's still that early in the morning. And we don't usually have that many in the morning. But, you know, he tells her about the dinner with Caleb and Lindsay. And she says, I'll handle it. And my note was, she's dreaming. She's dreaming if she thinks she can handle Caleb. It's never worked in the past. How is that going to happen?
Right.
But
it's not.
It's not going to happen. If you're watching this podcast on YouTube, you could see We Love Article. It's furnished our entire set.
I have been a fan of Article for years. Article is the easiest way to make your space look beautiful. This direct-to-consumer company combines the curation of a boutique furniture store with the comfort and simplicity of shopping online.
Article is inspired by a variety of modern design aesthetics, like mid-century, Scandinavian, industrial, and bohemian. You'll be sure to find a piece that works with your personal design style.
I am literally using my desk from Article right now. Everything's sitting on it. I'm ordering a sleeper sofa from Article because everything is affordable, but also looks so cute and stylish. I am obsessed.
I love Article too. Of course, they're known for their beautiful furniture, but they also have amazing decor and accessories. I have a beautiful brass floor lamp, a sheepskin throw, but they have so much more. The rugs, pillows, outdoor. I mean, the list is endless.
You can save up to 30% off traditional retail prices and everything is online. No need for salespeople or showrooms.
Shipping is free on all orders over $999 across the US and Canada.
Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. Go to article.com/OC and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/OC to get $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. Working out is hard enough, so you may as well make what you're wearing an easy decision. Girlfriend Collective makes sustainable, soft, supportive activewear that feels as good as it looks, so you can look forward to moving your body.
Girlfriend Collective creates responsibly sourced activewear for everyone from size extra, extra small to 6XL. I got an awesome leggings and bra set in the color Earth, this really beautiful brown color. In fact, I showed it to CG, my daughter, on FaceTime, and she went, oh no, I'm taking that. When I'm home from college, it's mine. And she never wants my stuff, but she wants this. She already has plans.
That's
for
always,
it.
Yeah, good sign.
I know.
I love everything I ordered. Now, it's no, you know, surprise to people that I love clothes and fashion and style. Not only is this stuff cute, it's so comfortable. So it has married the two most important things in my life, style and comfort.
Yes. They also have a garment take-back program called ReGirlfriend. So once you're done loving your piece, a long time from now, of course, send them back to be upcycled into new girlfriend gear. That's so cool.
For listeners of the show, Girlfriend Collective is offering $25 off your purchase of $100 or more when you go to girlfriend.com/theOC.
That's $25 off $100 or more when you go to girlfriend.com/theOC. Girlfriend.com/theOC.
Now, Alex's apartment. Marissa and Alex. Alex and Marissa. Do you have any memories of working with Olivia Wilde?
She was terrific. Yeah. I do. I mean, she was great. I remember thinking at the time just how talented and sort of just the depth of character. I also sort of remember thinking that, and I'm sure it's not the first in history, but I know that it was the first show that I had, that there was a sort of sexually fluid couple that was about to emerge. Can I say that? Are we not giving anything away now or anything?
No, it's obvious.
Okay. You know, it was sort of just, again, not in the history of television, but I just remember thinking for our audience, would this affair, how would it play? You know, and just that idea of this sort of, you know, this sexually fluid two women, and what I also enjoy about it is nobody made a huge deal of it. Right. You know, it wasn't like, oh my God, they're going to become an item. But it was interesting. It was the first experience I had working on a show that sort of delved into a little bit of this. But I actually think both actresses handled it very well.
Yeah.
And I remember just thinking Olivia was great.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like across the board, everyone loved Olivia.
Yeah.
In the scene, Marissa and Alex they're flirting in their undies.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, when I see things like this as a female, I instantly see in the script, Alex, Marissa cleaning up after a night. There's bottles everywhere. Mm-hmm. They're in their underwear. It's like, you know, there are things done purposefully for
image. The episode prior to this, Caleb walks in on Marissa and she's in like a nighty slip that she sleeps in. So this is another thing, like in their underwear, cleaning up what, you know, everything they drank last night. Sure. Obviously, it's television.
Sure.
There are things that are done specifically for television. It's not an accident.
Right. No, not at all.
But they are flirting. She takes her shirt off to go shower. Marissa does.
Yeah. And this is when you see, you never saw Alex do this with Seth, but she does a little, you know, googly eyes. And I'm here for it. I like the energy. I like the way it's written. Yeah. I like the way it's...
And I think Marissa did it intentionally.
Oh, yeah. She's
putting that
she's
out done, there.
Something stirring.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I did a bow, bucket, bow, bow. That was my... Anyway.
You are correct.
We are now. Yes. So now we're at the pier. And of course, it's a beautiful shot. Now that's a big crane overlooking Redondo Pier. And clearly I feel like that was a morning shot. Or could have... Well, no, if the sun's coming from... You could tell sometimes...
How can you tell?
If the sun's coming from the ocean, then it's an afternoon shot. But if it's coming from over the hill, then it's in the morning. But did you guys have to lock down the pier that much?
We tried to control it. We probably, if memory serves, we weren't permitted to like truly own it. We couldn't, you know, regular sort of civilians needed access.
Right.
So you do it as much as you can. And you usually put up signs that say like, if you're entering this area, you are... You know, you're okay with being filmed and we own your likeness and all of that.
It's a disclaimer.
Yes.
That if you step into this area, your image might be captured and it might be on TV and otherwise leave.
Right. Would you have problems with people trying to get into the shot?
Yes. Yes. It's funny because it works both ways. There are either people that are super pissed off that you're there.
Right.
Or there are people that like want nothing more than to get as close as possible to you.
Right.
But the pier, I remember it was always big background days, you know, so we would hire a lot of extras. So you populate it. And really what you do in a situation like that, when you're out in the real world and in a, on a location that you can't control fully, you try to sort of surround yourself with your background almost as a buffer so that if, you know, what we usually call bogeys. If a bogey's in the background, you can sort of block them.
They're going to be a little blurred.
Yeah. And you can cover them with, you know, you'll send a couple of extras to go, you know, stand in front of them or.
You need your own people to stay consistent for the different camera angles.
Yes. And that's the other thing, just for the continuity, you have your background there. But, you know, pier days were always, were big deals. It was a lot of, you know, a lot of moving parts. Usually a crane, usually Steadicam walk-in talks, you know, so you have Jody on a Steadicam, you know, doing his thing and cranes. And in terms of lighting, usually try to shoot that into a backlight, you know, so depending on what time of day you got there, you'd either want to look that way or you'd want to look that way.
Right.
You know, and depending on what your DP likes, usually they want, you know, the actors and especially the women in backlight, not really hard sun on their faces.
Yep.
I feel like Buzz was a big fan of backlight. Our DP.
Yes.
Director of photography.
Yes.
Yes. Because we went on to Heart of Dixie together, Buzz and I. Buzz is just the best.
I know. Love Buzz.
Love Buzz. And yeah, a lot of backlight. But hair doesn't love the backlight.
No. No.
A lot
shows
of frizzies.
All the little
flyaways, as they say. A lot of hairspray.
But this in this scene, Sandy and Rebecca are talking, which all of course I'm saying, don't you think they had this conversation last night? But then we wouldn't get to see it here. So he, she explains, he talks about his life and his family. And she thinks, you know, and he explains that it's not a Jewish girl from the neighborhood like she is. It's a conservative.
Quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite with a cute little button nose.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're telling us this because it's important that the audience know that technically Rebecca was the ideal woman for Sandy, or what on paper or maybe in real life would have been the ideal woman. The same values, come from the same neighborhood, they're both Jewish, and that it's that he married somebody completely the opposite is a significant thing here. So, you know, it's important for us to kind of get very quickly, we have to be on board with the strong feelings that Sandy has for this person. And so I can understand it can be a little bit like, who is this person? Mm-hmm. Why is he doing this for this? Like, why is he putting his marriage in jeopardy for this? And then, of course, he makes the point that she can't. He said, how did she respond? Rebecca says, how did she respond when she heard I was back? I haven't told her.
Mm-hmm.
And it is true, the fugitive thing, that she shouldn't, the less she knows, the better. But now here here comes my theory of why can't he tell her it's dangerous? Because in the last episode, when she literally accused him, you're still in love with her. And I was so upset that she said that. But the fact that she said that, he is so scared to tell her that she's alive now. Like, he doesn't know what to do because it's just such a sticky situation, mm-hmm. no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's not good.
Not good. I don't.
Oh, school.
Oh, school.
We're in school. Is this interior school? I think so.
Hallway.
Hallway lockers.
On
the soundstage.
Yes.
Soundstage. Where are we?
Oh. Yep. On stage.
Oh, Mount St. Mary, our favorite place to shoot. Oh, I knew
God.
That. Beautiful campus, but hard
base
to
camp,
shoot.
Which is where all the trailers are and where
15 minutes away.
Yeah, you had to drive very far
yes.
to get to the location, which was the school, exterior school.
Right. Which you'd think isn't a big deal, but when you do five scenes in a day and it's five different continuity days, that's five changes for the actors that you have to wait for them. It was very unideal.
A lot of waiting.
I always said, I'm willing to change up by set.
Yep.
A place. It doesn't make sense.
Who had to go to their trailer the most?
Yeah. Who did that?
Is this
who?
I'm gonna say that Kelly was not a big I'm gonna change on set person.
No, yeah.
I can see that.
You know, I think that's just was part of her thing. It's like, I understand your schedule, but I'm not going to change in a dirty bathroom,
right.
On the hallway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get it. You know, there are some people that were just like, fine, whatever. You know,
that'd be me.
Yeah.
I think that would be
change
me.
Change on set. No.
Yeah. She didn't even need clothes.
Fine. No. Good. I'm like a surfer.
Porno, I'm there.
Trailer bar? No. Oh my gosh. That's what happened on Tate's episode. If you remember that, you were the first AD on Tate's episode.
Yes.
And when we got to set and the sun, he was losing the shot. It was a crane shot of me driving up. And since you're here.
Yes.
But I forgot my shoes and it was super, super wide. And I said, and there was a lovely little family that lived there and they were watching. And I was like, who has black shoes? And they let me borrow a pair of shoes. And Nicole was so upset as the costumer. She's like, no, because you're wearing the wrong shoes. And I said, we'll never notice.
Yeah.
And Tate was like, thank you. Because it was going to take a long time to get somewhere.
The shoes and you'd lose the shot.
Right. But somebody, it's like somebody was disappointed. But my shoes were like that big in the shot. But I remember. Anyway.
Yep. Size of an ant, rather. Okay, at school.
Yeah.
We're in school. And Ryan is telling Lindsay about dinner at Kirsten's, that she's trying to put a dinner together for Caleb and all of them.
Well, he says...
he doesn't say Caleb.
Yeah, he says...
He's like, how?
She says, who's going to be there? And he goes... I was like, what? It was like mucus or something, but I laughed out loud.
Oh, here goes Ben and his comedy again. You gotta love it.
Yeah. So Kirsten, of course, now she's on a mission and she goes into the Newport group. Kelly's a strong woman. And this is like, if she has something to tell you, this is the way she would do it.
Right.
And Caleb instantly knows that she's not happy. So what is he resorts to complimenting her.
It's very weird.
Weirdest way.
Very awkward. It is very awkward.
That cardio bar, Yogalattes, is doing wonderful things for, like you could say, hey dude, you look good. But he goes, wonderful things for your figure. That's just, ooh.
It's creepy.
And the top is fetching.
Yeah.
But once again, I go to the writer's room and I'm like, how can they give Caleb words that are just super awkward, like say booty call, fetching your figure. So
he's a proper man.
But it comes off very Caleb quirky.
Caleb quirks. Okay. We're with Rebecca and her good old dad, Max. And she's telling him she's leaving.
Well, she said, you know, I have to, and on the pier, she said, you know, I have to leave.
Right, right, right.
Like, she tells Sandy. What else am I going to do? But then this scene, it felt really abrupt to me. For some reason, it jumped. And she's just told Max that she has to leave. And he's like, no. he was very...
You're doing really good impersonations today.
He emphatically was like, no, no, Sandy, you've got to give Rebecca's life back.
Yeah, because Rebecca's been on the run, obviously. But we learn here that she actually... never showed the night of the burning down of the nuclear lab. So she wasn't even there.
And she got still scared and ran. Yeah.
She was scared. She didn't want to testify against her friend. So this whole time she's been innocent, but on the run for 22 years.
Yeah. And it definitely hooks. You know, Max says something else here
you have to do it as Max though.
he says, well, he's got a family. Well, we were your family before, right? Or something
to
like
Sandy?
That.
Sandy? Right. Yeah.
We were your family before.
They're really drilling it in that Sandy was definitely like, very involved with
right,
this
like
family.
Right, like you are led to believe that they were meant for one another.
Right.
If this incident hadn't happened, it would have been Sandy and her, and they would have been married, and it would have been their family. So I think they're definitely hitting that. Sort of
hard on the head.
And you know what I appreciate here? So much in television, we get a monologue of exposition so that the audience can get the info.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving us the info in the dialogue of the conversations. And I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a much better, I don't know, it's designed for a smarter audience.
Yep. We have Seth and Summer at school on the soundstage. Summer, Seth is explaining to Summer his concerns about them working together. Close nights, whatever he's saying, his whole spiel. And Summer starts to consider these concerns, and he's right. Right? That's what happens, right? I think. Yes. And then she's starting to consider it, and Zach walks up, our golden retriever. Here he comes. Did you not love Michael Cassidy?
I loved Michael Cassidy so much. And I hadn't watched in a long time, and I had forgotten about him. And he came, like, his first scene, I was like, oh, yay. Yeah. I loved him. And he's like a girl holding a retriever. He was the sweetest guy. And he also, his character is him.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's like, that was the guy. There was no, you know, there was almost no separation. Yeah. He was that guy.
He was the best.
He's such a sweetheart.
Love him.
I wrote that I just smiled throughout this whole scene. It really shows the charm of the show. And, you know, and then I said, and a respite from the Rebecca storyline, lol. But I do like the Rebecca storyline. But Wildstorm, I thought it was just made up, but I looked it up and it really was, it was an American comic book imprint. And then it became a publishing imprint of DC Comics in 1999. So it was a real thing.
Huh. So this is what Zach brings up. He says, is that right?
So that Zach going, I gave them an outline of the stuff and da-da-da-da-da. I'm not going to remember his delivery, but it was so funny. I think there's bloopers on all of this stuff.
Always bloopers. I just like that Summer's like in the background, kind of out of focus, just like, what? Like reacting to everything and trying to like, oh,
so gosh. I'm going to have to be, he's going to have to draw me tonight. Yes.
By the way, Seth has been drawing every single one of these kids. You think he has Marissa standing there for Cosmo Girl? No.
Right.
I know the answer to this.
She wants to.
Of course she wants to.
She wants to.
Of course he wants to draw her. He doesn't need to. He doesn't need a model. All right. Kirsten is setting up for dinner for Caleb. Sandy says he has to head back to the office. You know, this whole thing, you're just like,
I'm here for the storyline, but it's cringy.
Yeah, no, but I'm totally like hooked in this storyline.
Well, so, and that's my question to you. Yes? Since you've probably never seen this before, right?
What is the OC?
No, but what was your reaction to all of this stuff? I mean, because it's
Rebecca stuff. I go through this a lot, right? So I'm rewatching this. I'm 40 now, and I'm really getting into the parents' storylines,
right?
Because like funny. The kid stuff, I'm like, oh God, like kid stuff. What? Some of them are good, obviously, but I'm really hooked in these adult storylines, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this. And she, you know, and the chemistry is there too with Peter and Sandy and Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really like invested in this. Like, what's going to happen? I'm hooked.
Yeah. But it's got to be plausible enough. And again, back in the, you know, we can talk to Josh about this when we see him. But that storyline, it's not a simple little, like the Bonnie Somerville, Rachel character.
Mm-hmm.
It had to have weight and it had to have some seriousness to make him do this you know, there's nothing wrong with helping someone from your past and even remembering those feelings. It doesn't mean he doesn't love his wife, but it puts him in this weird position of having to lie to her and making her feel a little, ooh, ooh.
Ooh, ooh. As one does. Okay. So, yeah, Ryan tells Kirsten that Lindsay isn't coming to dinner. So Kirsten leaves Ryan to finish setting the table to go get Lindsay.
Quick.
Bait shop. Marissa questions Alex about what happened with her and Seth.
Yeah, we kind of, I kind of feel like Seth and Alex are kind of just floating out here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it just kind of dissolved.
Right.
As it should have. Just kidding. Sometimes I get my character and myself just, they're blended and it's very confusing. Marissa and Alex are flirting, right?
And then she asks if she can spend the night again because, you know, mom's gone, stepdad's there. And Alex is smart.
Yeah.
She's like, you know,
What
are you doing with me? And Marissa gets a little self-conscious and, you know.
She does. And she leaves.
But she's smart to do it because she knows she has some feelings.
Yeah,
and
she has to sort them out,
right,
I think.
Right. But Marissa gets kind of flustered and confused and takes off. And
Lindsay is now playing the oboe. Because of course, why wouldn't Lindsay play the oboe? I mean, poor this character, man. You know,
so,
give her the oboe.
So unfortunate.
Give her the blazers, the oboe, and the car. Like she's practicing the oboe.
Yeah.
And
Kirsten tries to convince her that Caleb's a good guy, but then she really doesn't do that great of a job. But she's like, what? Oh, sister to sister, figure it out.
It feels like in that moment, really, Lindsay's doing it for the sister relationship, not necessarily for the father-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
And that's the relationship that I think that, for me, it's like, okay, she wants to invest in this relationship.
Right.
Right.
You know, dad, we'll see about dad. But, you know, Kirsten has come to me and sort of put herself out there. I will reciprocate.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely accurate.
Good point. Because, you know, basically, what you put out is what you're going to get back.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirsten can get pretty pissed off at things, but she recovers pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
She understands things and she resolves. She has good conflict resolution.
Yes.
Skills.
She does. Now Sandy is showing Rebecca his extra room in his office that she can stay in.
I looked at that couch and I'm like, oh, that was from Kelly's dressing room. That was the
was
one.
Was it?
That,
so that's why she has a good couch? Because she don't. Did she buy herself a couch?
No. She just ended up with a good one once. And I went to the production office. It's so embarrassing. This is like probably the stupidest thing I've ever. Can I have a better couch in my dressing room? And they were like, what? I want one like Kelly's. But she did. She just had this really good couch. But the couch in the scene reminded me, like, I wonder if they borrowed the couch from that. They didn't, but it just reminded me. But we did shoot on the pier in those offices down there. Those were the real ones. Yeah.
I remember being in, there was some sort of empty storefronts.
Yeah.
Just sort of the...
south of the bait shop.
Yeah, south of the bait shop and just a little, you know, sort of not on the pier directly, but just in the mouth of the pier. There were some shops and restaurants and stuff. And there were some open, empty offices.
Quite a few empty ones. Yes.
Yep.
So she you know, shows the couch and this is when she decides, she says, pulls out some weed and...
Well, he tells her he's going to take her case.
Oh, that's really important. Yeah.
No, the weed's the most important.
But she pulls out a big bag. But back then, obviously, it wasn't legal.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pulls out and she says, do you still like Patron? And this is Mindy being like,
you don't think Peter or Sandy would have drank Patron?
Well, two things on, the, you know, I like to watch things with subtitles because you can actually catch things.
The dialogue.
And it said Pachong. And
Pachong?
I was like, do you still like Pachong? But she said Patron. But then I was like, it's been 22 years. Was Patron 22 years
did you
before?
Look? I bet you looked it up.
I did.
And?
It was 2 years. It didn't come out till 2 years after. Because it would have been 87, I think, when they... Wait, 22 years.
We find all the holes.
Wow.
I know.
That is a deep
research. Listen, she is very good at doing the research. Like, she comes up with things and I'm like, I don't even know that they exist. So what would the tequila have been? Did you go that far?
Well, there was a lot... At the time, it was a lot more mixed tequilas, like the Jose Cuervo. Uh-huh. That's what was normal, and that was what there was a market for.
That was the standard?
The pure agave stuff.
I wonder if Don Julio existed then.
A lot of them existed, but that's a good one. But
we're going to go on tequila. Yep, we're going to research
Paul,
tequila
John
after
Paul
this.
John Paul Mitchell created it with a partner.
As in the hair product?
He owns it, yeah, and created it.
Patron.
Yep, and he has a Patron train that he takes around the country. I've been on it. It's actually designed...
This just gets weirder and weirder.
Look it up. The John Paul Mitchell Patron train. It's from like the mid-1800s. It's redesigned. It was at Comic-Con.
That's why you've been on... You mean you just went on a ride on it?
Because he takes it around. No, you can't... He pays to attach it to an Amtrak train and he'll park it at an event like a Comic-Con.
So and it's just has one events car. That,
it's one car.
Uh-huh. Ah.
Yeah, not the whole thing.
This is... Listen... This is information I never...
You get your hair done, you get drunk, I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah.
On a train.
No, on a train. Train. On the Patron train, the girl's dream. Could be. You can cut all this part out.
So obviously they're going to drink and have dinner. They're having Patron and now they can.
He says,
it exists.
Let's stick to the tequila. But at least he says... he says no to the weed, but yes, let's stick to the tequila.
By the way, alcohol, way more dangerous than weed.
Yeah, right.
Just saying.
Yes.
You know?
100%.
I don't know if I support your decision, Sandy.
But the fact is he's doing something.
Perhaps. Perhaps it would have been illegal substance.
Oh, right.
At the time.
And he's a lawyer. Yep. Okay. That's a fair point.
Here we are in Summer's bedroom.
Summer's in a robe, of course. And Seth comes to sketch her because, of course, he can't sketch this fake character without looking at her. So
she drops the robe.
She drops the robe.
It's so cute. And you look, I don't know, the hair and makeup were dazzling.
Well, thank you, Cindy. And I don't know who did my hair that. I feel like hair changed so much on the show. I can't remember who did my hair, but Cindy was my constant.
Right. This Megan, is what I was going to ask you if you wore extensions because your lashes were amazing.
On my eye? I'm sure Cindy put extensions.
Cindy likes a good lash.
She does. She does like a good lash.
But, you know, and then he poses you and I had to laugh and he says, can you do a Kimbo? And you say,
a what-bo?
A what-bo? That's
yes,
cute.
I know, but of course, Summer just has all this pleather laying around, bustiers and boots.
I know.
There she is in all her glory.
Which you probably went through many, many costume sessions just to get that right, right?
I don't know.
Let's say you did. Let's say you did.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Like a tonal thing because it had to be sexy, but not.
And I think I wear it quite a bit. Like, I feel like that look, I can remember wearing it in the,
I think
you
have to show up as the character.
I have to show up as the character and that stuck. So yes, I'm sure it was a lot of approval and whatnot. And they get real close. He tries to, you know, show her how to draw and takes her hand and, you know, the whole thing happens. They almost kiss.
Yes. It's very close.
Here comes the dinner.
Dinner?
These dinner scenes. Did you hate shooting them? Because
yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I was going to say.
Dinner scenes. Well, dinner scenes are always difficult.
It's just a lot of coverage. I mean, when you think about it and in terms of shooting and actually, you know, getting the whole scene, there are a lot of people you have to cover and a lot of looks. So they take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then you also have all of the food continuity. And this one was a
fondue.
Number one, fondue.
Fondue.
That's what you choose. But also just with the pulling down when he has the heart attack and pulls down the tablecloth. It's like a resetting nightmare.
Right. That's right. I would think you'd have to get that in one shot.
You do as much as you can. And really, when you shoot a scene like this or any sort of stunt or any, you know, special effects thing, you get it right. You get it right. You get all your coverage. And then you sort of leave that for last. And hopefully you get it in one and or you throw three cameras at it. So you have it from all the angles. But still, it's eating continuity. It's all that. Dinner scenes are pain in the butt.
So yeah, if you ever see a big dining room scene in any kind of film or any kind of television, especially if there's like 12 people, it's chances are that scene took two days to shoot.
Yeah, at least
the same food gets reused. It's stinky. It gets kind of nasty. But I was going to say again, props to our props.
Yes,
talking about the detail of what people do. You know, there's the apples. At first, I was like, why is there a bowl of apples on the table? And I went, oh, fondue. And you know, he's actually eating it. You can tell when actors don't want, you know, when it's an eating scene and they're just eating lettuce.
A dinner scene, you don't want to commit to eating much because you're going to have to do that 1,000 times.
Yes.
Or you have a spit bucket underneath you. And then right as soon as they call cut, if you can get through a scene without having to swallow, you spit it out. But I wanted to say, do you remember either on the OC or like the biggest reset you ever had to do that was like a nightmare because it, I know that's a tough one and maybe, you know, you might have to think about that one, but just wondering because that can be such a pain in the ass.
Yeah,
it is. And it's funny. I don't have one that comes to my mind, but certainly dinner scenes are tough. They're also what can be difficult is either a fight scene or a love scene and like hair and makeup. The continuity of like two people rolling around and sort of like, you know, was my hair here?
Yeah.
Was it in the front? Was it in the back? Was it, you know, you cut and somebody's hair is standing straight up on end. And when did that happen? And when did the bra come off or what, you know, or slip down? Those are tough ones too.
Yeah.
Or like explosions or getting wet or, you know, getting wet is a big one, especially if
you
have
reset.
To be glamorous.
Yeah. No. Getting wet is a big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, in the pool. You hope that.
Mud. Mud everywhere.
Yeah. You hope that those scenes, again, it's like, well, can they start in the pool? You know, as the AD, I'm always like, well, can't they just start in the pool? And, you know, I'm always trying desperately to like avoid either the reset or
wet
whatever
hair,
it is. Yeah.
But on this scene, as he's going down with the heart attack from eating too much fondue, the cheese-induced heart attack, clearly. But as he's doing that, clearly there was a high-speed camera going for slow-mo, too.
Yes.
Which we don't do anymore because we're on HD. What do they, it's just, is it on HD now? Is it just a, is slow-mo just a switch?
It's an iPhone.
Right. You can do it both ways. You can actually shoot in camera high speed.
Right.
And then if you do it in high speed, in post, you have the option of either slowing it down more, speeding it up more. You can sort of, you know, it can ramp into, you know, it can start slow and then get fast. So now very often you still will shoot it off speed, but you have that much more leeway in your edit as to what the final look is.
Got it.
I think.
It was a very impactful scene. I thought it was done really well.
It was.
But the dialogue leading up to it, though, when Caleb, you know, he just can't help himself, and he's not ingratiating himself to Lindsay or anyone, but when he starts bantering with Ryan, and he lists off—
Do you call that banter?
Attacking. But when he lists all the things— if you list the things, he burned down the model home, he did all of these things, and he got a girl pregnant. It's a long list of pretty shitty things.
Yeah.
Of right. difficult things that have happened to Ryan. But then
he's not wrong.
No, he's not
just
wrong.
It's just a shitty thing to bring up at dinner.
Right.
Right. It's right. like the delivery and the intention.
Yes.
But Ryan has that, well, at least I didn't have to pay the person off. Or, you know, whatever the, his dig to
Here comes
Caleb.
Those adult balls again.
Yeah.
They keep showing up.
Wonderful for television. But from Lindsay's perspective, like, finally she gets it. Like, oh, shoot, maybe these two shouldn't be in the same room together.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know.
Yes.
Oh, that's coming up.
So he has a heart attack.
He has a heart attack. It's called a fondue attack.
And then we're in the hospital and Seth and Ryan and Lindsay and Kirsten are waiting outside for the doctor. Sandy shows up.
And she instantly goes,
have you been drinking?
Have you been drinking?
Oh, that's me. Anytime I can smell it from a mile away, I'll be like, have you been drinking? And I'll know exactly what it is.
But of course, the doctor, you know, shows up and
she gets distracted. Kirsten gets distracted, yes.
But So he just, the night that he decides to have a little walk down memory lane and drink some tequila with his ex-love,
his father-in-law has a heart attack.
His father-in-law has a heart attack. Just when you want to do something that's probably the wrong choice,
well,
something's going to happen.
The universe shows you.
Yeah, right.
Such. Okay. We're in Summer's bedroom. And here, Marissa. What?
I love Marissa here.
Oh. Yeah, it's cute. And we haven't seen Summer and Marissa, their little bestie relationship, a lot lately.
No, it is. It's a sweet, it is. And that's it. It was fun. It was sweet.
Yeah.
It was funny.
And why isn't Summer saying, okay, Marissa's been hanging out with Alex every day, we've noticed.
Right.
But the only reason I could think, because, you know, when she was doing that before, or, you know, when she was hanging out with Oliver, Summer was feeling like she lost her friend. But maybe because...
Well, I have a boyfriend.
You have a boyfriend, exactly.
Yeah, I'm
so you're not really noticing.
Right, but Summer's telling Marissa that her and Seth almost kissed. And they're reflecting on the moment. And then Marissa is saying, well, I had a moment with someone.
Well, she says she understands.
Something like that.
Well, she understands.
She understands. She asks about, like, charged moments between people.
And Summer says, well, who have you been doing rubbing noses with? She says, no one. It's just, you know, I understand what you mean, kind of thing. So she's kind of skirting around the issue.
Right. And I'm putting a cape on Princess Sparkle.
Right. Right.
Because of course she has to be along for the comic book ride.
But I do, before that, I do love Marissa saying, when Summer says, shouldn't you be at the hospital? And she's like, who cares? It's just Caleb. Which is pretty harsh, but the way he's been treating her, I totally understand.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. You had a heart attack?
I get that.
Uh-uh.
Yes, but this is the scene that Jen has been talking about that I guess we were laughing a lot.
Yes.
While shooting.
I think so.
I would believe it.
Because it's in the script to be working with Princess Sparkle. And it was
Listen,
just...
I am known, it's true, and your memory is right, like breaking probably the most out of character and laughing. I'm the worst. I've said this before, that Ben is the one that gave me the tip that helps me if I'm laughing uncontrollably and can't stop is you just tell yourself it's so funny. And you keep telling yourself it's so funny. And that makes me stop.
Huh.
Ben has helped me because let me tell you, I cannot get through a scene without laughing.
Ben would laugh at Adam a lot.
Yes. A lot.
Yes.
It's very cute.
And that also depended. Like, you know, you said who broke up the most. It really was pairs of actors.
Who was working together.
Yes. You know, some people sort of tickled the other actor more so than others. So it would be
would get me going.
Yes.
For sure. and yeah. Now, I actually had a laughing fit once that stopped production. It went on for 45 minutes.
Oh. I was like, oh my God.
It was so funny. The other actor and I, and the way it ended, he ended up...
What show was... Oh, it's not a show. It's not the OC.
No, no. But he ended up like punching his hand through a wall or something.
Because you wouldn't stop laughing?
No, he couldn't stop laughing. So he had to turn it around and he got angry because we stopped production.
Yeah, but I think Michael Cassidy, I think I broke the hardest and the longest with Michael Cassidy. Not even Brody. I think because he was my boyfriend and I was so used to him. I probably broke the most working with Michael. Okay, anyway, let's go back to the hospital where Caleb has had a heart attack.
Well, they're in the hospital room and Kirsten and Lindsay, they're allowed in to visit Caleb. And this is on the blooper reel too.
What?
The scene.
It is? Yes.
There was something going on.
There was something wrong with Tony Warmby's headset or something. There's something going on off camera and Alan just broke and sort of was teasing Tony, I think.
Right.
On blooper reel.
And in the blooper reel, he has his New Zealand accent.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, Australian, and it's sort of the Brit and the New Zealand, the two of them then talking to one another.
Right, right.
Alan was lovely as well.
Gosh,
I mean,
so
he
fun.
Plays such a heavy, but he was such a sweet, is such a sweet man. And
We
kind of always
on.
Plays the heavy.
He does.
Doesn't he?
And he's like dying in every show. Poor Allendale. Aww. He is a lovely man.
Yeah.
Well, and this scene...
Yeah, he has a change of heart, it looks like.
And he's softened up and all of a sudden he realizes like this is more like what Allendale is really like.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I need a second chance. And all I could think was, how long is this going to last? Of course I know, but you would think
he's
that...
He's lying?
What?
Is he lying?
Mm-hmm. You got to watch.
I do this all. I just wait for the spoilers. I'm like, tell me what happens. I like your note. Mindy wrote that Alan is such a handsome man.
Oh, yeah. He really is.
He is.
He is.
Quite handsome.
Sandy with Max and Rebecca.
Now he's deep in the law books. He doesn't think he can clear her name, but he wants to try for amnesty or a plea bargain.
Here, Rebecca tells him that he should be with his family. So he's going to do that, which is a good call. Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Rebecca.
All right, let's go to the Cohen house.
Yeah.
Alex shows up to Seth to return one of his sketches that it was still hanging in her office at the bait shop.
And I think that sketch becomes it's one of the evil water polo players. It's on the villain team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's incarnate of either like a Luke or even a Zach. I'm not sure. I'll have to. We'll find that out.
Okay. But this is a nice scene with Alex and Seth. And they talk about how they were each other's in-between people.
What we needed the scene to close out the storyline. Otherwise, I feel like
we would have felt kind of... very...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, it's... in the past couple episodes, I've noticed Seth and or Adam's portrayal, his performance, has been very subtle, mm-hmm. little nuanced, just more humbled,
mm-hmm.
which we have not seen from Seth, where he's like, you hurt me. But then, you know, she's explaining that, you know, we were each other's in between. I helped you. You helped me get over Jody. I helped you get over. And she opens the book.
Nobody.
And then she's smart enough to say, good luck with Summer.
Yeah, there are a lot of pictures of Summer.
Right, right. So, yeah.
But I like that scene with them.
I do too.
All right, Sandy is in the kitchen cooking a... meal. He's cooking a home-cooked meal.
A guilt meal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A guilty,
mm-hmm.
I better put some attention or put some time into my
family.
Into my wife, right?
Yeah.
And so then, I'm going to have raw salmon on set. That's another thing. That's the other thing about like food scenes.
Yeah.
It's like stinky salmon on set all day long.
Locks.
Gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all day and it sits there. They tell me, you know, I hear on like the Bachelor franchise, you know, they have all those dates at dinners, but the food's been sitting there for hours and no one eats it. And they're on a date. Like that's supposed to be real life.
Right.
Anyway, goes really? To show you, it's still just food sitting out for stinky hours salmon. On end. Stinky on salmon. No one wants it.
So Seth knocks on the door at Summer's bedroom. And they...
Did you find it weird that they always just show up at bedroom doors?
They did it...
Do they always do that?
They always do it. They always did it on the OC. And because it's so expository and such like, what are you going to do? Show them walking in the door?
Right. It's, right. Yeah, a lot of times time.
Also, there's no set to see them yeah. come from.
Right.
So it's like, but it is. It's so random. People just turn up at... And especially like kids just... Walk into other kids' house yeah. on the OC and all of a sudden you're at like the bedroom door.
Right.
But often it's because it's just so much shoe leather.
Right.
It, what are you going to do? Have them come in the front door and then you're going to watch them walk up the stairs and then you need to get to the scene. But it's true.
They it's just funny. They're always
just in each other's houses.
Yep.
But now okay, we're
so
back
he's
to
at
we're
Summer's now, room.
Yeah, what? We're back to Seth and Summer being... awkward with each other because...
They agree that they shouldn't see each other much yeah. after that close encounter.
Something's been reignited in both of them. Or it's never gone. It's just, yeah, there's a little...
Yeah.
The flames are back.
Mm. And then Zach just appears.
Now, this was a big blooper. Too.
What?
Him running in to say, we're supposed to go to Wildwood. Or we're supposed to... He couldn't get the word out. But yeah. But you can always tell when he's just laughing. He just... Because he just appears too.
Yes. Yeah. He just appears out of nowhere. And by the way... Like, knows that Seth and Summer are both just in the bedroom, like, at that moment. Of course, whatever.
Hey, guys. Yeah, they're working together.
Here he comes, Golden
Late
Retriever.
Nights. Yeah.
Retrieving his Frisbee.
We're going to San Diego.
Yeah, that the three of them, after Seth and Summer agree, like, they shouldn't spend time together, Zach is like, the three of us going to San Diego. So here we go.
Now, we're in the bait shop with one of the loveliest moments of the show. I love this song.
Well, Rachel Yamagata. So this show introduced me to her. And she's still one of my absolute favorites. And this song, it's so beautiful. And it just brought it all back. Watching her perform and, you know, being on the show. And just one of my favorites. So super happy that she was in this episode in this moment. And well, what was it like? Do you remember like always shooting the bands? Like... The memories there?
I do. And I mean, I remember the first time we did a band, it was actually we did it in a warehouse and it was either...
Rooney.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was Rooney. I mean, I know we had Modest Mouse. I know we had The Killers. I know we had Rachel Yamagata. We had a whole bunch. It was challenging because not so much for Rachel actually, but a lot of times what we'd do is we'd shoot whatever scene it was, and then we'd reserve a little time to sort of shoot kind of a mini music video.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd, you know, first team would leave and we'd have the background and three cameras and shoot just so that we could intercut when we needed to, but we'd perform the song a number of times. It was time consuming, but also really exciting. And I also feel like a lot of the bands that the OC had on were really just at the very beginnings mm-hmm. of their careers. I think, I mean, it might be punitive to be saying that, but it was sort of certainly newer talent. And it was tough shooting it, but it was also usually very exciting. And we most of the time would have a crane. And it felt very music video and very action-y and fun. And you also knew you were sort of in for it for, mm-hmm. oh, okay, today's a musical day.
Right.
Right. But,
right.
You know, but Rachel was, you didn't see as much of her performance. Basically, editorially, you started on her and then we moved away from her.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't quite as much of the music video of her. But that song is amazing. And it's funny because my husband and I were watching the episode together when I was, okay, I'm coming on what episode? And he goes, that's why this song is on, like comes right. on my iPad all the time.
Right.
So it's like, now I understand why this song is in our music library.
Wait, did we say it was Reason Why by Rachel Yamagata? It's Reason Why by
and
Rachel
it was
Yamagata.
The perfect song.
It's lovely.
To bring in and propel the storyline of Alex and Marissa.
Yes.
And as they come up together, as she walks up to her
Marissa,
and quietly just grabs her hand. And this is when I say, I'm here for the storyline and the way it's been portrayed and presented to us as an audience, that I'm excited for them to be together. Unlike, it was kind of fun to see Alex and Seth together, but not like this.
Yeah, I would agree.
Partly because of how it was put together editorially and with the music and that manipulation of how they take the audience on this journey.
No, it's a sweet moment, and you kind of root for them. I think in that moment you go, oh, this is sort of a lot of possibility coming.
Yeah. And I just want to say before, when you said first team, Jen, I'm just the explainer of the episode.
Good.
But first team are the actors in the scene who are playing out the scene, and they call us first team.
And second team are people
who like stand in to set up the shots.
The lights and all that.
Yeah.
Artisty. Anyway. Yeah.
I know. All the lingo. This is a very educational episode, everybody.
So in the last scene in the hospital, Caleb grabbed Kirsten and Lindsay's hands and said, I'd like another chance. And
there's a lot of Lindsay's hand grabbing crying. is the theme, right?
Yeah. So then Lindsay's grabbing Sleepy Ryan's hand and, you know, takes him back home. And now she says, I think he's asked for the chance. And now it's after all of this, she finally gets that probably Ryan is not, she can't continue to ask Ryan to be part of this. She's going to give this dad thing a try. And maybe it's better to I guess, take a break. And I guess he understands it. So
I don't like it.
Okay.
You know what I don't like? I don't really like Ryan and Lindsay. I'm not feeling them at this point. I'm kind of like,
it's too difficult.
It's too difficult.
Messy.
And I'm not really, I haven't seen them be like that couple where you're like, oh, I love them together. Like right now, you know? And then she's like, I want to give my dad a chance. Sorry, we got to take a break. I wasn't a fan of this.
Yeah.
That's all. That's my personal opinion.
It's messy.
It is. I just love Ryan. I told you. Big fan of Ryan's. Rewatching this show.
She would have been kicking. If you could go back, you'd be telling Josh that you wanted a storyline.
Summer and Ryan. Hello.
Why not?
Hello.
Hello.
Marissa did everything and everyone. Like, she went every direction. Summer had Seth. And Zach, our little golden retriever.
So, while Kirsten is out, she said she went out to get some things for her dad. But then Sandy calls to check on Rebecca. And I wrote was, so stressful. It's just so stressful. Now, this scene, I wasn't quite sure what it was about when Seth's phone, well, the home phone rings. Then he kind of pretends to have superpowers and have phone come to him.
Seth,
which basically is demonstrating laziness. Right? And Kirsten, all superpowers about,
it's about laziness?
Yeah, because I want to be teleported. I don't want to have to drive in traffic. I don't want to have to walk to school. I just want to, anyway. That's my theory.
Okay.
But the phone rings. It's Kirsten calling for Sandy. And I guess her intention was to tell him, I just have one more pit stop. I'll be home soon.
Yes.
But then I guess she's saying, she tells Seth, I'm going to go fix up his office, which gives the audience like, uh-oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Vibes. And because she wants to surprise him.
Yeah.
So? Then he says, come help me with the table. And says, Mom will be home in a few minutes. And then we see Kirsten entering Sandy's office. And?
Out comes Rebecca.
And Kirsten Kelly Rowan's face. Oh my gosh. I just wanted to take a screen grab. It's like,
you have to describe.
I just feel like it's like if you stepped in the biggest pile of dog poop and you looked down and you went, Rebecca? No, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's a big moment there. And she thinks she's dead.
But no, her face was.
And not only that, yeah, she's hiding
it was like
in
horror.
Sandy's office. I get it.
Yeah. Okay. It's bad.
It was bad.
That's my commentary. It's bad.
And that is the episode. Another cliffhanger.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So going through this, you know, you were explaining to me that you get to know us so well on set that I like to be on time on set, but sometimes traffic would make you late. But then I would try and make up for it and make sure that I was on set, because you have a call for hair and makeup and then you have a call mm-hmm. for being on set. Mm-hmm. So if traffic got me late for any reason, we're all late at some point, then you try to make up for it. But Jen was explaining that she would get to know our quirks and personalities sure. well enough that she could say, okay, it's going to take this person this long to get to set because this is, or I have to let them know. And I just described
some of
that.
So you had a few tricks up your sleeve.
You pad some people's, you know, if you really needed them ready at noon, you know, you might, and you sort of figure that if in a rush, Cindy could get the makeup done and hair department, you know, okay, it's an hour in hair and makeup. You want them ready at noon. They're going to be 15 minutes late. You pad the time.
Right.
And you sort of got into a rhythm and you knew. And also when... it also worked the other way, that when after a number of seasons, you knew people. And so you could sort of say, listen, I think I'm going to need you at noon. But if you can get here at this time and maybe shave up 15 minutes off your hair and makeup time, you know what? You don't have to come in quite as early. Mm-hmm. Because noon would be luxurious. So very often, you know, hair and makeup call times for, you know, female actresses are... you know, can be 5 o'clock in the morning mm-hmm. and then hair and makeup comes in, you know, 18 minutes before that. So you're talking about like crazy early times. And very often, you know, the cast will come in at crew call, they do a rehearsal, go back, finish up in hair and makeup. It may take a while to get cameras set up.
Getting ready for Julie, there was a lot that went into it. And, you know, so there were times when it's like, and there were times that for some reason,
Julie was always tan too. Didn't you also do a lot of body makeup?
There was sometimes, yeah. And so
just
you have
of
to.
This
so,
OC but I bronze. Learned,
yeah. yeah. But that's when you learn to communicate and say, it's going to please, I don't want to be, you never want camera waiting for you or the crew waiting for
right.
you. But that's when you say, can I have extra time? Because you have to ask permission for that, because that also might means maybe bringing the hair and makeup in early and you have to pay them. But you need that extra time. And like there are people like Aaron Spelling would say, sorry, 45 minutes in and out, you make it work. Where we're like, I need an hour and a half to 2 hours, especially because we're doing full body makeup because it's a bikini or something like that. So the females, we took longer.
The more I worked, the more I had like a producer mind where I'd be like, well, I'm not going to paint my nail. I see which scenes and which days, and I would actually
Same
pay
haircut.
Attention.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be like, I'm not changing my hair. I'm not like, it was more that mentality, which you kind of adopt the more you work, I guess. Or I did anyway.
I think so. At first you think, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I have blue nails yeah. with this dress
yes.
and pink nails with this dress? And then you realize what that means.
Right. Yep. And like crimp my hair. But then the next scene it's straight. And it's like, no.
Yeah. I mean, and the OC was very much about, you know, I think it was aspirational. I think it was about beautiful people and you know, in a wealthy society and gorgeous clothes and these amazing locations and events that happened. So you needed to take some time within the care and feeding of the looks of people and the men as well. I think the OC was sort of about wish fulfillment for somebody, you know, from wherever in USA to have that sort of vision of what this sort of California dream was about,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that, so therefore you can't just say, oh, you know what, get her ready in 15 minutes and she'll be fine.
Right.
There, you know, there was a look of the show that you needed to uphold.
Right.
You know, and sometimes you take that at the chin because it's going to take a little longer to get ready. When a crew and a cast can come together, And it takes seasons. And I mean, the OC was certainly one of those shows that everyone became invested in it. You know, and the crew is invested in its success and the cast is invested. And of course, there will be, you know, there will be trouble. There will be drama. There will be something. But, you know, the OC for me was definitely one of those gigs that is something that you hope for. A long-running show with a group of people that you ultimately really respect. And you get into a great working sort of rhythm with a crew. You know, it's what you hope for.
So who yeah. are your favorite directors?
Oh, gosh. I loved Michael Lang. Yep. So funny.
Uncle Mike.
Yep. Michael Lang. I think Patrick Norris.
Yep.
Ian, of course, was a fan favorite. And, you know, Ian was... Yeah.
Ian. So you were telling me that you got to be the first with Tate's
yes.
episode?
Yes. I did Tate's first episode, his first directing episode. Did that. I relayed this story to you as well. So I was prepping with Tate, his first episode. It was the day of the Tech Scout. So we were all getting ready. We were loading onto a big van people mover, going to scout locations. We had loaded up in front of stage and I sort of looked around. I said, all right, does everyone have their buddy? And I looked over and there was Ian, who at the time was our sort of supervising producer, director. And he did probably half of the episodes or a lot of the episodes during the season. So I look over and there's Ian sitting in his chair and it's like, okay, I have my director. And everyone's like, yeah, we're ready to go.
And it's Tate's first time being a director,
it
doing
is
any
first
of this
time,
probably. Yeah.
First time. Okay, let's go. We pull out. We get to basically the driveway and Rosecrans. And I went, wait, I forgot Tate. We pull back around and Tate is waiting outside, like looking around like a lost child, aww. like first day of school lunchbox in hand kind of thing. And I felt so bad. And of course, then he never let me live it down rest of the episode. But I felt so bad because I was so used to working with Ian. Yeah. I thought, oh yeah, there's my director.
Right.
And
Tate.
I know.
Oh man, Tate.
So he got on the... He got on the bus. We let him on the short bus and we went on our
did I do
tech
something
scout.
Wrong?
Yeah, no, he really, he had told me that he thought like maybe he got the wrong door because there are a number of ways to get onto the stages. You know, he thought maybe he was at the wrong door. He had the wrong time. No,
oh my
I just
gosh.
Left him.
And of course.
Like the one person I was supposed to, like,
yeah.
He was supposed to be my buddy.
Yeah.
In that buddy system. And I left him behind, poor man. Thing. But,
and of course, he never let you live it down. That's Tate.
No, he forgave me, but
yeah.
never let me forget it.
Right. We wanted to see if you would be willing to answer some who was most likely.
Sure.
Who was most likely to show up late to set?
I would say it would be a tie between Misha and Kelly.
Oh!
As long as it's not us.
Nope, not you guys.
We're good.
Yeah, no, I'd say late to work would be Misha.
Okay.
Just sort of late for her call time. Is she here yet? Is she here yet? I think it was Misha sort of the later years. Latest to set, everyone's going to hate
me.
No, I think late to set was probably Kelly in that she was, and rightly so, she was very, very particular. And a lot of times it was, you know, something wasn't just right, whether or not it was in the trailer or getting ready, you know, and she'd need her moment. It was never tragic, but she was sort of the one that we're ready for you. It would take a moment to get her up and out and onto stage.
I'm sorry, Kelly. Got it. Who is most likely to mess up their lines?
Peter. I think Peter might have been a little... I also think Peter was very often tasked with that expository dialogue. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say Peter, and not, I mean, super talented and such a pro...
But he
I
kept
also
going.
Think,
he'd
yes.
keep going. It, yes. Something would come out and he'd keep going.
Yes,
and
God only knows what would come out at times. Right. But I think it would be Peter.
Well, that's awesome.
I think that's about
we've
it.
Tortured you enough.
Yeah. tortured
going
you
down
enough.
Memory lane.
Oh, super fun.
Yeah.
Super fun.
Really, it for a while, you know, this sort of kicked off my the whole after the OC, I tended to work on this sort of show. It was all like the teen drama show stuff. But this was truly one of my favorites.
Aww.
Of all of
I
it.
Love that.
Yeah.
It feels like everyone kind of has that feeling that they took from the show, it being like this special thing. And it's nice that it's felt across the board, I'd say.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was fun. And it was so, I mean, it was such a phenomenon for, you know, a spit of time. And you know, it was this sort of incredibly quick moving rise. It's like after, you know, season one, and then all of a sudden everything blew up.
You notice that?
I mean, it was a couple of things. I remember needing much more security when we were out and shooting. I remember filming on Zuma Beach, and there was a photographer up in like the scrub brush taking photos, like long lens photos. And I think it was you and Misha in bikinis and just somebody snapping away. And, you know, sort of that was one of those things like, is there really somebody in the bushes taking photos?
Right.
You know, so there was that one. And then we went to that Neutrogena party. Neutrogena threw...
Misha was like the spokesperson.
Spokesperson. Yeah. And they threw a party and we were invited. And you and I were leaving the party at the same time. And you just got mobbed by people wanting autographs. And it was sort of those first moments of like, wow, this is really something.
Yeah.
You know, and it became something. And it was, you know, it was this sort of very hot, bright flash for a moment of time, you know, and it was fun. It was fun to be involved in something like that as well. You know, I had sort of started, my early career was great fun, but maybe not the best television in the world. Sorry, all of you, you know, all the fans of the Stu Siegel stuff. Great fun, great people down in San Diego, but just not the sort of notoriety and the popularity was definitely something new. And yeah. And I think something that everybody sort of had to deal with and dealt with in their own way. And some, you know, it was just interesting to watch.
Yeah. Well, I love that.
We love that.
And it's great when the crew is behind the product that we're doing. It makes such a difference. When you're on a sinking ship kind of show, it can be a pretty kind of a negative atmosphere.
Yeah. But we had a special thing together, and it's always nice to see the family that was together for so long and catch up and hear all the stories. And we can't thank you enough for coming and talking to us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love it. No, I love hearing different perspectives.
Oh, yeah. I love the crew stuff because that's the real stuff, you know?
That's the real behind the scenes.
It is. Because you see everything. You know everyone better than, you know what I mean? Like everywhere. So it's just really cool to hear.
Yay. Thank you, Jen.
Yeah, thank you, Jen.
You're welcome.
Okay, guys, that is the end of our show. Thank you so much for listening. Follow, rate, and review. Welcome to the OC Bitches. Wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like to watch us, check us out on YouTube and HBO Max. And see ya, bitches.
Bye. Bye.
When Shopify says you can sell anywhere, they mean it. Ooh, hold up. Just got a new sale. Whoa, Shopify doesn't mind if you're at sea level. Or on top of the world.
Whether you're selling carabiners or crop tops, start selling with Shopify today and join the platform simplifying commerce for millions of businesses worldwide. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/podcast22. Shopify.com/podcast22.
Hi, everyone. It's Rabia Chaudhry.
And I'm Ellen Marsh.
And we have a new podcast called Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case. As you know, I am a very smart lawyer.
You are. You're so well-respected in the entire world. You know everything.
Thank you so much.
And as you know, I am a famous Broadway star. Gorgeous. I sing like a nightingale.
Well, yes. At least that's what your mom says. Just kidding. This is Ellen Marsh.
And I'm
Rabia Chaudhry. But we are teaming up to bring you a show like you have never heard before.
True crime meets talk show. Nobody's done it. We're going to do it. We're going to do the impossible. And it's the two things that I love. Ellen, I think you like it too.
What? True crime and talking?
Yeah.
I'm there. Every other week, we will have a guest talking about whatever true crime case they are obsessed with. We have a list, everything from the Lacey Peterson murder.
Yeah, some of the most famous cases you've ever heard of, obviously, like JonBenet Ramsey, the West Memphis Three.
Chris Watts, Kalief Browder.
Elisa Lam, Madeleine McCain.
Sandra Bland, the Springfield Three. The list goes on and on. But they are all cases that you know, and we are going to dive in deep with someone else and just talk about them.
No. We're going to solve the case, Ellen.
That's right. We're going to solve the case. So subscribe to Rabia and Ellen Solve the Case wherever you get your podcasts.
On holiday, there's nothing like doing nothing. As an Expedia member, you can save up to 30% when you add a hotel to your flight, so you can go out there with great ambition to do absolutely nothing for less. Expedia, made to travel.